This is Audible.
You're listening to the audio production of Leadershift, The 11 Essential Changes Every Leader Must Embrace by John C. Maxwell, published by HarperCollins Leadership and read by the author. Keep listening at the end of the book for special bonus tracks featuring number one New York Times bestselling author Rachel Hollis, former NFL wide receiver and motivational speaker Trent Shelton, and Delta Airlines CEO Ed Bastian, with additional commentary by John Maxwell.
Chapter 1. Why Every Leader Needs to Leadershift. Change or Die, Thomas Enchley. I've been wanting to write a book on the idea of leaderships for a long time because a lot has changed in the decades I've been studying and practicing leadership. In the 1970s, when I was new in my career, I could find very few books on leadership. Back then, management ruled the business world and Peter Drucker was the king. That started to change toward the end of the 1980s as a few authors were starting to write leadership books. People eagerly bought and read them. Why? Because they could feel that life was moving faster, change was becoming normal, and they needed a way to navigate the world's complexities, which were becoming more challenging. People need to learn leadership to become successful. The principles of management, which have been taught for years, depended on stability and known factors, as expressed by Eric J. McNulty, Director of Research at the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative. Management systems and processes tend to be linear. They assume that similar inputs will result in similar outputs. In many situations, this holds true. Leadership, however, requires a more nuanced view of the world because it involves people, what motivates them, what their interests are, and how engaged they become. Mechanical systems may be linear, but as soon as the human element becomes involved, the system becomes both complex and adaptive. Where management books took stability for granted, leadership provides principles that work in the face of the unknown. Back in the 80s, people were looking for leaders to guide them, and people running organizations recognized the need to become leaders themselves. As they began to apply leadership principles to their world, they thrived. That's why for the last 30 years, leadership has ruled the business world. Fast is faster. Forward is shorter. As fast as the pace was in the 1980s, when I look back, it seems slow by today's standards. Life moves much faster now. The rate at which we must deal with change and uncertainty can seem insane. For several years, one of my organizations, the John Maxwell team, has asked me to do short videos they post daily called Minute with Maxwell. My team will set me up in front of a camera and then give me a word or a phrase asking me to react to it or teach on it for a minute or so. It's fun, and the video gets posted online as a kind of mentoring moment. Recently, for one of these sessions, the phrase they gave me was fast forward. What immediately came to my mind were the words faster and shorter. Here's what I mean. The future seems to be coming to us at a faster pace than ever before. It's not going to slow down. Would anybody seriously consider the idea that tomorrow will be a slower pace than today? Technology, social media, and the rate of change will never allow that to happen. To go forward, we need to move faster. And as leaders, we need to stay ahead. We need to see more than others, and we need to see before others. Because of the pace of change, we also need to be flexible. Do you remember the old Mother Goose rhyme, Jack be nimble? Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack jump over the candlestick. Well, the more nimble, adaptable, and flexible we are, the more quickly we can move and change. Traditionally, in athletic races, the first three finishers are recognized and all receive prizes. Today, outside of sports, it seems as though only winners get recognized and rewarded. As the saying goes, coming in second means you're the first loser. That's why speed and agility are so important. A few years ago, I saw an article in the New York Times on cheetahs, which can teach us a lot about the importance of agility when it comes to success. Anyone who has watched a cheetah run down an antelope knows that these cats are impressively fast. But it turns out that speed is not the secret to their prodigious hunting skills. A novel study of how cheetahs chase prey in the wild shows that it is their agility, their ability at leaping sideways, changing directions abruptly, and slowing down quickly, that gives these antelopes such bad odds. The cheetah ran as fast as 58 miles an hour, and their average speed was 33 miles per hour. High-speed runs accounted for only a small portion of the total distance covered by the cheetahs each day, the researchers found. They also found that a cheetah can slow down by as much as 9 miles per hour in a single stride, a feat that proves more helpful in hunting than the ability to break highway speed records. A cheetah often decelerates before turning. The data showed that this enables it to make the right turns that give it an advantage over its fast and nimble prey. Forward is also shorter. As a young leader, I was taught that to be effective in leading my organization, I should create a long-range plan of 10 years, a medium-range plan of 5 years, and a short-range plan of 2 years. That seems absurd now. Today, a long-range plan may be 2 years. Technology and innovation move so quickly that everything is going forward in a shorter time frame. As leaders, we can't drag our feet or take too long making assessments. We have to change, reread our situation, and change again, and continue changing. How does a leader do more than just hang on and survive in such an environment? The key is to learn how to continually make leader shifts. What is a leader shift? It is an ability and willingness to make a leadership change that will positively enhance organizational and personal growth. Educator and author Bruno Martinuzzi cited a study conducted by an organization called the Economist Intelligence Unit. It identified the top 3 leadership qualities that will be important in the years ahead. The ability to motivate staff, that was 35%, the ability to work well across cultures, 34%, and the ability to facilitate change, 32%. All 3 of these qualities require adaptability. Martinuzzi likened this to the Chinese proverb that says that the wise adapt themselves to circumstances as water molds itself to the pitcher. Perhaps at no other time in recent history has adaptability been more important than it is now. Adaptability, the ability to change or to be changed to fit new circumstances, is a crucial skill for leaders. A more recent study conducted by Wright Management and published by the Flux Report made it clear that the need for adaptability is only increasing. They asserted that 91% of future recruiting in the workplace will be based on people's ability to deal with change and uncertainty. Good leaders adapt. They shift. They don't remain static because they know the world around them does not remain static. This has always been true, but it's never been more obvious than today, nor has the ability to change quickly been more important. And when I say that good leaders adapt, I don't mean that they conform. A success coach, Dave Martin, pointed out, there is a profound difference between adaptability and conformity. The greats seem to instinctively understand this difference, and while they disdain conformity, they cherish the courageous ability to adjust by changing circumstances. Conformity is the negative quality of blending in, becoming average, refusing to stand out or capitalize on one's uniqueness. Adaptability is the positive quality of being able to sense the shift in wind direction and proactively adjust one's course to take advantage of that wind shift. While conformity is a weakness based upon fear of rejection, adaptability is a strength based upon confidence in oneself and in one's own judgment and abilities. In the face of uncertainty, people who conform pull away to a safe place to protect themselves. Adaptable leaders who make leader shifts lean into uncertainty and deal with it head-on. I like what Paul Kurowski, Executive Director Emeritus of Northeastern University's Center for Family Business, said about this, though he used the word ambiguity instead of uncertainty. Ambiguity may keep people up nights, but anyone seeking exquisite simplicity in his or her career ought to look for a non-leadership position. Leaders, by definition, have followers. Followers need direction. Direction requires decision-making. Decision-making requires consideration of options, and consideration of options involves dealing with uncertainty. If you want to be successful as a leader, you need to learn to become comfortable with uncertainty and make shifts continually. You need to be flexible and deal with uncertainty without losing focus. Leaders who leader shift must be like water. They have to be fluid. Water finds a way, then makes a way. First it changes with its circumstances. The environment dictates the change. But moving water is also forceful. It first moves around an object, but at the same time it begins moving the object. It can wear down solid rock over time. A seemingly small shift can make a big difference. Simple and obvious it may be. Trivial, it is not. The truth is this. Every advance you make as a leader will require leader shifts that changes the way you think, act, and lead. If you want to be an effective leader, you must leader shift. You cannot be the same, think the same, and act the same if you hope to be successful in a world that does not remain the same. As Malcolm Gladwell said, that's your responsibility as a person, as a human being, to constantly be updating your positions on as many things as possible. And if you don't contradict yourself on a regular basis, then you're not thinking. Maybe as leaders, we need to recognize the value of mental floss. Dentists encourage us to use dental floss daily to promote the health of our teeth. We need to use mental floss to get rid of old thinking and promote the health of our leadership. In my 20s, I was inspired by the words of 19th century preacher Phillips Brooks, the author of the famous hymn, O Little Town of Bethlehem. He wrote, "Sad will be the day for every man when he becomes absolutely contented with the life he is living, with the thoughts that he is thinking and the deeds that he is doing. When there is not forever beating at the doors of his soul some great desire to do something larger, which he knows that he was meant and made to do." I memorized those words and have often used them to move me toward greater growth and achievement. Leader shifting moves us forward in the face of the natural temptation to be mentally rigid. It prompts us to become more innovative and get out of our comfort zones, question conventional wisdom, and welcome change. Every leader shift you make has the potential to make you a better leader. Are you ready to shift as a leader? Before I talk about the practices involved in leader shifting, I want to lay the groundwork by describing the mindset needed to leader shift. How open are you to change? Are you willing to start asking more questions instead of giving more answers? Are you willing to become a better listener, a better observer? Are you willing to rely more on your intuition and your creativity? Leader shifting will require you to rely on values, principles, and strategy, but it will also push you to rely on innovation, to seek out options, to harness creativity. You also need to let go of some things and be dedicated to getting better. Leader shifting is not easy, especially when you first start doing it. Often you leave behind something that has worked to pursue something untested. You'll have to deal with the tension between the stability that gives you security and the adaptability that opens up opportunities that will empower you to get better, to become someone new before you can grow into something new. The desire to improve will drive you to keep learning. But here's the good news. Learning to leadership will make you a better leader. How to leadership. If you answered yes to the previous questions or you're willing to move in a direction where you'll be able to answer yes, then you're ready to take steps forward and start leader shifting. As we move forward in this book, I'll take you through 11 major leader shifts I've made on my leadership journey. But before we do that, I want to teach you 7 things you must do to leader shift successfully. Embrace these practices daily, and you will be ready to face every leader shift situation with flexibility and confidence. Number 1. Continually learn, unlearn, and relearn. I've already discussed the pace at which our world is changing. I recently read an article published by the World Economic Forum that brought light to this. To quote Harvard Business Review's Mind the Skills Gap, the lessons learned in school can become outdated before student loans are paid off. As it points out, the skills college graduates acquire during a bachelor's degree that used to provide enough basic training to last a career, today have an expected shelf life of only 5 years. In turn, studying the impact of disruptive change on existing skill sets, in a recent report, The Future of Jobs, the World Economic Forum discovered this. On average, by 2020, more than a third of the desired core skill sets of most occupations will be comprised of skills that are not yet considered crucial to the job today. Or as Lynda.com author Mark Nieman Ross states bluntly, in 4 years, you'll have to relearn 30% of your job. How are leaders to thrive in this environment? We must learn, unlearn, and relearn. This process is essential for leader shifting. We have to embrace change every day. We must be willing to let go of what worked yesterday and learn new ways of seeing, doing, and leading. We cannot afford to be in love with one technology or methodology. We keep learning and changing, or our leadership dies. Number 2. Value yesterday, but live in today. Baseball great Babe Ruth is rumored to have said, "Yesterday's home run doesn't win today's game." Isn't that fantastic? It's a good reminder to focus on today. What we did in the past may look good on a resume, but it won't help us win today. For years, I had a sign in my office that said, "Yesterday ended last night." I put it there to remind me that all the good I did yesterday won't guarantee a good day for me today, nor will all the bad that happened yesterday mean that today has to be bad. Today stands on its own. If I want to be great today, I need to do what is necessary now. I can and should be grateful for yesterday, but I have to focus on today. When I was a young author, I was mentored by a very successful writer. I will always be indebted to him for the help that he gave me. One evening we were having dinner, and I shared that I was writing another book. He inquired about the thesis and content, and then he asked me, "John, is this going to be your best book?" "Yes, it is," I replied. "Good," he said, "because you are only as good as your last book. If you disappoint your readers, they'll always wonder if they should buy your next one." I've never forgotten that advice. I've written and sold a lot of books over the years, but I can't rest on my past reputation. People may honor you for what you did yesterday, but they respect you for what you're doing now. I value yesterday, but I live in today. Number 3. Rely on speed, but thrive on timing. Having to move quickly in today's climate isn't really a choice if you want to succeed. However, timing is. As a leader who leader shifts, you need to understand the context of your environment. What is happening around you determines whether you hold fast or move forward. Leading is like knowing when to eat a pear. It's said that there is only one day in the life of a pear when it's perfect to eat. As a leader, you must be able to recognize the right timing of leadership moments. When does a team member need an encouraging pep talk, and when do they need a challenge to step up? When is the right time to add a new product or to retire an existing one that has already seen its best days? When should your organization use some of its cash to seize an opportunity, and when is that a bad idea? For leaders, timing is critical. Good timing enables leaders to seize the moment and gain the victory for their team. That sense of timing is especially important when leaders shifting. To paraphrase financier James Goldsmith, when the leader sees the bandwagon, it's too late to lead. Number 4. See the big picture as the picture keeps getting bigger. My journey leading people really began when I first understood that everything rises and falls on leadership. This truth became the foundation upon which I built my life. It continues to be the catalyst for my personal development and my training of others. When people started asking me to speak on leadership, I didn't have much time to teach. Later, when I decided to write a book on the subject, I thought it would be my only one. Now I've been leading people and training leaders for more than 45 years, and my perspective has been enlarged tremendously. The more I learn about the subject, the more I recognize I don't know enough about it. The more leadership experiences I gain, the more I realize I would benefit from more experience. There is no finish line when it comes to improving, and there is no complete picture of leadership that can be mastered. As long as I'm growing, my leadership picture will continue to enlarge. If you keep growing, yours will too. I like to think of this process as layered learning. Each time we learn a new lesson and connect it with many things we've already learned on that same subject, we gain depth and we see more of the big picture. This process requires time. No one can learn all the lessons at once. Putting together lessons requires intentionality, but when you do, you expand your knowledge. My first formal leadership role was in a church in southern Indiana, in a farming community. I developed a friendship with a community banker who one day explained to me how he decided whether or not to loan farmers money. He would ask them if they were fencing in or fencing out. If they were fencing in, they were done expanding their farm. They were intent on holding on to what they had and doing only minor improvements to their property. However, if they were fencing out, it indicated they were expanding, wanting more land for crops or livestock. They were extending their reach and striving to do more. My banker friend said, "I loan money to those who are fencing out. They need help to get bigger and better." Leader shifting is all about fencing out. It's all about seeing a bigger picture and getting better. Number 5. Live in today, but think about tomorrow. Leaders have a natural bias toward action. They have to be proactive today for the sake of tomorrow. However, the longevity of their leadership is determined by how they think and see the future. Staying ahead of the team comes from thinking ahead of the team. If you think ahead, you can stay ahead. As political columnist George Will said, "The future has a way of arriving unannounced. We cannot recover yesterday, but tomorrow is ours to win or lose." How can we do that as leaders? What can we do today to ensure we have what we need to lead tomorrow? We have to practice what I call advance attraction, which I discovered in the 1980s. I concluded that I could experience a positive future only if I had a good dream and a good team. At that time, my dream excited me, but my team did not. How was I going to attract the team I needed to fulfill my dream? When you become aware of what you need or want, you're better able to see it and attract it. If you think about blue, you will see blue everywhere you look. If you start noticing blue, you will see even more blue. What you focus on expands. Awareness allows you to bring into your future the people and resources that you need. It enables you to lead your life instead of merely accepting it. Being unaware has exactly the opposite effect. Unawareness lets you see nothing, attract nothing, and receive nothing that will enhance your future. Leaders who are unaware wonder why they don't have access to the resources they need to ensure a better tomorrow. They cannot leadership. Their tomorrow will not be any better than their today. Going back to what I did in the 80s, the first step toward getting a better team for the future was to know what I wanted and needed. I started by writing down the qualities of a team I wanted to have. This developed an increased awareness in me that promoted advanced attraction. Here's how it works. When you know who you are and you know what you want, then you will know the kind of people you will attract and the things you will discover. Your mind will think things that will help you get what you want. Your eyes will see things that will help you get what you want. Your heart will feel things that will help you get what you want. Your attitude will believe things that will help you get what you want. Your mouth will say things that will help you get what you want. And your actions will attract things that will help you get what you want. As I attracted and discovered the kind of team members I needed to realize my dream, I began to experience positive results. Today, I am abundantly reaping the benefits of this leadership. Number 6. Move forward courageously in the midst of uncertainty. Life expands or shrinks in proportion to our courage. When leaders fail to make a necessary leadership because of fear or uncertainty, it only increases their fear, which results in frustration. The greater the inaction of leaders, the more opportunities they lose, because opportunities are always surrounded by uncertainty. All good things include uncertainty, and overcoming uncertainty requires courage. I like what Brad Lomanick said about courage in his book, The Catalyst Leader. He quoted my friend Andy Stanley, a wonderful leader who founded North Point Church. Andy was speaking to catalyst leaders, but his words also described leaders who leadership. Many, many great things have begun with a single act of courage throughout history and today. A person steps out and makes one courageous decision, and that one domino starts many other dominoes falling. We have to step out and take that first step, and we may never know the ripple effect of that one courageous decision. Catalyst leaders, your decision to do something courageous may result in something greater than you ever imagined. Step out. Fear in leadership usually is connected to uncertainty about the future. But uncertainty about the future is never going to go away. I tell leaders all the time, uncertainty is why there are leaders. Uncertainty gives you job security. Wherever there is uncertainty, there will always be a need for leaders, which means always stepping out into the unknown, which always requires courage. Betty Bender, former president of the Library Administration and Management Association, said, "Anything I've ever done that ultimately was worthwhile initially scared me to death." When faced with uncertainty, as leaders, we need to move forward courageously. Number 7. Realize today's best will not meet tomorrow's challenges. If you want to become good at leader shifting, you need to keep getting better, because tomorrow's challenges will not be one with today's abilities. Here's my strategy for getting better. My goal at the end of each day is to feel satisfied because I gave my very best. But my goal at the beginning of each day is to be dissatisfied enough to try to improve on yesterday. This interplay of dissatisfaction and satisfaction creates a tension that makes me want to improve. As I approach a new day, I try to be my best. That will make tomorrow better. The best way to make good choices tomorrow is to make right choices today. And the best way to realize the changes we want tomorrow is to make the needed changes today. The best way to meet challenges of tomorrow is to do our best in the challenges of today. I can't skip today and hope tomorrow is better. So every day I ask myself, is this the best I can do today? In this way, I'm following the advice of my hero and mentor, John Wooden, who said to make today your masterpiece. At the same time, I don't rest on my best. You've heard that good is the enemy of great, but best is the enemy of better. I have to cultivate the dissatisfaction required to get better. I purposely create that tension every day. The question, is this the best I can do today, helps me to make the most of today. The question, am I getting better, spurs me on to change. I want to grow into tomorrow's challenges, not just go into them. If I keep getting better, I can leadership better tomorrow. Yesterday's best is the foundation for tomorrow's improvement. If you want to keep getting better so that you can become a better leader shifter, then learn something new. Ask yourself, when's the last time I learned something for the first time? Try something different. Ask yourself, when's the last time I did something for the first time? Find something better. Ask yourself, when's the last time I found something better for the first time? And see something bigger. Ask yourself, when's the last time I saw something bigger for the first time? Keep in mind, everyone can improve, and everything can be improved. Every day has improvement possibilities. Now you understand the framework for leader shifting. Continually learn, unlearn, and relearn. Value yesterday, but live in today. Rely on speed, but thrive on timing. See the big picture as the picture keeps getting bigger. Live in today, but think about tomorrow. Move forward courageously in the midst of uncertainty, and realize today's best will not meet tomorrow's challenges. The rest of this book focuses on the most important leader shifts I have made over the years. Without a doubt, these shifts have strengthened and sustained my leadership. Each has changed my course, setting me in new and better direction. Each has allowed me to gain new leadership territory and grow inwardly. Each has shed light on my leadership journey, and I believe they will help yours. Even a small shift can make a big difference. However, these are examples of leader shifting, not a blueprint. The leader shifts you need to make will be unique to your journey. While it's true that some of yours may be similar to mine, many will not be. But don't forget, every advance you make as a leader will require a leader shift that changes the way that you think, act, and lead. When you make a leader shift, it will make you a better leader. As you listen to this book, you will need to continually shift from action to reflection. I will ask questions and present challenges so that your best leader can emerge. The leader shifts in this book will not take you from bad to good. They will take you from good to better. If you try to make some small shift in that direction every day, you can and will reach your leadership potential. I would like now to make a personal comment to you about Chapter 1. I set for you today a reason to leader shift, and I'm sure that you found some of these reasons compelling in your life. But I would like to talk to you now, not only as an author, but a friend, and say to you, the reason this book is important to me is that it is the leader shifts, the changes I made in my leadership, that allowed me to reach my potential and be the person I am today. I truly believe that it is impossible for you to be all that you can be, or for me to be all that I can be, if I don't make changes along the way. Now, the changes that I'm talking about in the book are not mundane changes. Change doesn't necessarily mean success. I've known changes to be bad changes and hurt a person instead of help them. So that's why in this book, I lay out changes that I have made, changes that have made me better. And I do that as a guideline for you. Again, you'll have leader shifts that I didn't make in my life that you'll be having to make in yours. But I wanted to give you kind of a guide. I wanted to be a mentor to you. I wanted to be a model for you. I wanted to take you on my leadership journey to say to you, these are some changes that had a positive effect on my life. And it's my thoughts, even bigger than that, it's my prayer that as you begin to learn these leaderships, you'll have the courage to make them. Because I can promise you this, they will take you to higher ground. And that's what I desire for you more than anything else. You're already a good leader. I just want you to be a better leader. And let me also say one closing thing. I'm still leader shifting. If I would write this book 5 years from now, I would have a couple more leader shifts in it than what I have now. Because I'm still growing. I'm still learning. I'm still changing. I'm still developing. I'm not the same person today that I was 5 years ago. And you won't be either if you make those leader shifts. Nothing is more sad to me than a leader that's what I call an historian. This is a leader that just talks about yesterday and what he or she did yesterday, the, quote, good old days. Well, let me tell you, friend, the good old days really weren't that good. You just kind of forgotten all the bad stuff by now. What I want for you is not for you to be a leader of history, and this was yesterday, and this is what I did. I want you to be a leader of today. Remember this. If what you did 5 years ago still greatly excites you, it's probably because you're not growing. It's probably because you're not leader shifting today. So let's go together through this book. I'm your friend. I want to help you. I think we can leader shift together, and together, I think we can go to higher ground. Let's get started. Chapter 2. Soloist to Conductor, The Focus Shift. One is too small a number to achieve greatness. That comes from my book on the laws of teamwork. It's called The Law of Significance. One of the first and most important shifts anyone must make to become a better leader is from soloist to conductor. You could be a successful person on your own, but not a successful leader. I began to learn this lesson and make this shift in 1974 when I heard Zig Ziglar for the first time. Zig, who later became a good friend, made a positive impact on millions of lives, and mine was one of them. The first time I went to see him speak, I was mesmerized. He was so dynamic. I had been trained to speak and had been speaking for about 5 years, but Zig was on a different level. He moved back and forth on the stage. His delivery was distinctive with his southern drawl. He paced his words for impact. He had charm, and at one point, he even knelt to make a point and connect with us. I loved everything about what he did that day. But what made the greatest impression on me was a statement he made. It became the catalyst for taking my leadership mindset from soloist to conductor. Zig said, "You can get everything in life you want if you will just help enough other people get what they want." Those words struck me like a bolt of lightning. Immediately, I realized that my leadership focus was wrong. I was like a soloist who wanted the entire orchestra to serve me and my agenda. Instead, I needed to act like a conductor who worked to bring out the best in everyone around me. My agenda needed to change to how I could help others, not just myself. Over the next couple of years, my focus shifted from me to we, and I made a discovery. My increased effort to first focus on others and add value to them increased the energy of those I led, and it increased my energy while I was leading them. That's when I discovered that it's wonderful when the people help their leader, but it's even more wonderful when the leader helps the people. Recently, I read an article about four musical soloists who have been transitioned to become conductors. South Korean Han Na-chain, who has enjoyed a successful international career as cellist, recently became a full-time conductor. When asked why she began conducting, she replied, "I am drawn to the great symphonic and operatic literature, and also by the music-making and collaboration that exists between the conductor and the orchestra. Collaborating with the orchestra is tremendously rewarding. Every orchestra is different, so the conductor is always trying to find the most effective way of conducting that particular orchestra in order to unite the group behind a common vision and interpretation." Chang pointed out that conducting is completely different from being a soloist. "When I play my instrument," she said, "what I think quite naturally and instantaneously translate into sound. When conducting, I'm making sound with a group of individuals. The possibilities and the potential of the sound of an orchestra are virtually limitless, and this is truly fascinating to me." Eric Jacobson, an American violinist who began conducting, spoke about the role and impact of being a conductor. "Ideally," he said, "a conductor is a catalyst for mutual understanding, with the orchestra becoming greater than the sum of its parts." And Gemma Nu, a violinist from New Zealand, who recently began conducting, said, "I became fascinated by the way orchestral music unifies and inspires everyone involved. Experiencing music together creates a strong human bond between us, no matter who we are or where we come from. The potential of a group is always greater than that of an individual. People working together possess limitless possibilities. They can work together to do something greater than themselves. And when they bond, they enjoy the journey of working even more. However, that doesn't mean that working together doesn't have its own challenges. When you transition from soloist to conductor, there are some realities you have to face. Number one, going slower so you can go farther. You probably heard the old expression, 'it's lonely at the top,' applied to leadership. But think about that statement. If you're at the top all alone, where are the people you're supposed to be leading? Shouldn't they be at the top with you? If you're at the top alone, it means you took off ahead of your people and left them behind. If you climb the peaks of success alone, you're not a leader. You're a hiker. You're a leader only if you have people with you. Your pace will be slower, but your journey will be together. Good leaders don't go to the top alone and then yell down, 'Hey, people, come on up. If you can figure out how to make this climb, come up and join me.' No, they make a conscious decision to slow down. They carefully choose their steps so that they can help others make the climb with them. Think about how this must have been for cellist Hanna Chang when she shifted from soloist to conductor. As a musician, she could pick up her instrument anytime she wanted, play any music she wanted, and do so however long she wanted. She could focus on any part of the music desired or any aspect of her technique with no regard of others. Now, as a conductor, she can't do that. She has to make arrangements. She has to be on other people's schedules. She has to take into consideration the abilities and personalities of a large group of people. She has to communicate her vision, and in the end, she bears responsibility for their success or their failure. As I've already mentioned, leaders have a natural bias for action. Good leaders see more than others do, and they see before others do. It's in their DNA to move quickly and decisively. So their natural inclination is often to run fast on their own, to climb as high as they can. But to lead others successfully, leaders need to travel with their people, not run or climb ahead of them. This requires a leader to do what I call the leadership dance. As you lead, your position in a group can't be static. Remember, leadership, unlike management, is dynamic. It expects change. So to do the leadership dance, you must step ahead of people, staying close enough for them to see you, step beside people, listening to them and talking about their journey, and step behind people, sharing words of encouragement to keep them going. Doing this dance keeps you connected with your people and energizes everyone. And that's important, because healthy organizations are not about the one person who leads them. They are about everyone who's in them. Being a good leader is about helping people reach their potential. That doesn't happen unless the leader is willing to slow down and take the journey with them. Number two, recognizing that you need others. Another reality you must recognize when transitioning from soloist to conductor is the need for other people. You can't produce the music of an orchestra when you're trying to be a one-man or one-woman band. Before I heard Zig Ziglar speak and realized I needed to make a leader shift, I only thought of how people needed me. I believed that I was the key to their success. But after I started focusing on helping others, I began to understand how much I needed them. Only by working together and helping one another would we be able to become successful. Once I made that discovery, I began creating an environment where people work together to add to one another's strengths and offset one another's weaknesses. I ask others to come alongside me and make up for my leadership deficits. I, in turn, work to apply my strengths to their weaker areas. I made it my goal to cultivate an environment where we put completing one another ahead of competing with one another. Notice the difference between these two attitudes. You see, when I compete with you, I have a scarcity mindset, but when I try to complete you, I have an abundance mindset. When we're competing, I think win-lose, but when we're completing one another, I think win-win. Competing practices single thinking. I think just of myself. Where completing practices shared thinking. Now I include you in the picture. One's exclusive, the other's inclusive. A completing culture creates wins for everyone. It lifts morale. It encourages team members to make one another better. People enjoy working in such an environment. As I worked to create a culture and an environment where completing was valued, I better understood how I needed others. I also began enjoying what we were doing together. Number three, making the effort to understand others. Many entrepreneurs and high achievers are able to work alone. Like good soloist musicians who choose to play in the subway, they can create music without the assistance of any other musicians. It's also true that some soloists are so talented that others are willing to work with them even if the soloist is egotistical and inconsiderate. But no one can become a good conductor without making the effort to understand other people. When people lead without taking the time or making the effort to understand those who are trying to follow them, the results can be tragic or comic. Several years ago, I witnessed a funny incident that occurred with my grandchildren. When they were young, we often vacationed together in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. No matter where we vacationed, I always looked for opportunity to do something fun with the kids. This particular year, I decided that we should organize the grandchildren into a marching band. The kids were excited as we handed out kazoos, maracas, and tambourines. They worked together on a song, and they were having a wonderful time. When they were ready to march, I held up a whistle and baton, and I explained that the leader would use these to lead the band. I, of course, became the first leader to demonstrate how to direct the band. The whistle was a signal for them to get ready to march. And then when I pointed the baton forward, that was their signal to play and march. When they heard the whistle again, that was the signal to stop. And for the next few minutes, I led them around the pool as they marched and made music. As soon as I saw that they had it, I let the grandchildren take turns being the leader. They were enjoying themselves and all was well, until 4-year-old John Porter was given the whistle and put in charge. He loved the idea of being in control, so he would blow the whistle to start everyone marching, but only after a few steps, he would blow the whistle again to stop them. Then he would start them. Then he would stop them. Start, stop, start, Stop. The kids weren't marching. They were lurching. All the children began to protest, but John didn't care. He loved the feeling of power. It may have been for the first time all of his siblings and cousins had ever done what he had said. And as we watched, the adults couldn't help but laugh. But the truth is that a lot of leaders in organizations employ little John's style of leadership. They like the power of bossing others around, and rarely do they think of how the people they're leading feel or what they think. I have to confess, I was one of those leaders in my early years. As a soloist leader, I thought the symphony was there to simply accompany me. I only wanted people to understand and embrace my vision, my agenda, my journey, my talents, my hearts. I was like little John, leading my team around the pool, and I was whistle-happy. To make the leadership from soloist to conductor, I had to consider everyone else. I needed to understand and embrace their thoughts, desires, talents, contribution, and journey. Several years ago, I was speaking in Buenos Aires, Argentina. One evening, my host took me to a large ballroom where we watched a huge exhibition of people dancing the tango. There must have been 200 people out on the floor in beautiful costumes. They were fantastic. Their sense of movement and rhythm was wonderful. I greatly enjoyed watching them. Years before, my wife Margaret and I had taken ballroom dance lessons, so I had a little bit of appreciation for how difficult dancing is. The tango looked very complicated and difficult to execute with precision. I knew that my host was an excellent dancer, so I asked him, "What enables them to dance so flawlessly and effortlessly?" He said the key was understanding your partner's point of view. "To be able to lead properly," he said, "you want to understand how it feels to be led. In the tango, you cannot lead without having the sense of the follower." That made sense to me. The follower has to be able to trust the leader, and she must be able to move with him in time with the music. Only together can they accomplish the dance. That cooperation and understanding also applies equally to good leadership. Number 4, wanting others to shine more than you do. My host in Argentina also shared another insight about the tango that applies to leaders who shift from soloist to conductor. He explained that the dancer who leads sets up the dancer who follows for success. The leader provides the foundation and makes it possible for both of them to successfully execute the intricate serpentine steps and kicks. As a result, the follower gives the tango its full expression. The more secure and solid the leader is, the more the follower is able to shine. Good leaders who conduct rather than go solo want the people who work with them to shine. How do they do that? They follow this thinking. Before I say, "Follow me," I find you. Before I ask you to listen to me, I listen to you. When I show you the big picture, you are in it. When I point to success, I point to you. Often you hear me say, "I need you." Often you discover, "He needed me." After the journey, we are both exhausted. After the victory, you hold the trophy. Good leaders do what they can to put others in a position to win. As the co-founder of the John Maxwell team, I try to do that for coaches who become certified through our organization. Twice a year, we host a training conference for new coaches. For 3 days, the faculty and I get to teach attendees how to make a difference with their lives and the lives of others through coaching, training, and speaking. It's so much fun. One of the teaching sessions I do at every conference is a lesson I call JMT DNA. It helps coaches understand the culture of the John Maxwell team, and it encourages them to embrace the values and behavior I embrace as a leader who wants to add value to others. In recent years, I've chosen veteran coaches and invited them to join me on stage. We talk about how they flesh out the team values, This gives those coaches a chance to shine and helps the new coaches understand how to conduct themselves with integrity as they start their coaching and speaking careers. After one of the sessions, a couple of coaches gave me a special gift, a Mont Blanc highlighter. Engraved on the side were these words, "You highlight our lives." Wow! What a wonderful gesture that it was to me, because I do strive to highlight others. Every day I look for opportunities to lift up people. To do it, I follow a simple formula. I see the possibilities in all people. I honor them in front of others. I invite them to help others achieve the vision, and I notice what they do well, and I compliment them, and I thank them to make sure that they know that they are valued. I strive to do this every day. As you can see, none of these actions takes brilliance or a high degree of skills, but they do all require intentionality. If you want to be a good conductor, give them a try. Help others shine. Number 5, helping others to become better every day. To become a successful leadership conductor, you must go slower so you can go further. Recognize that you need others, make the effort to understand others, and want others to shine more than you do. But you will also need to learn how to do things every day that help the people you lead to improve. This requires taking the focus off yourself and looking for ways that you can help others reach their potential. Sometimes that can be a challenge. A few years ago, I was getting ready to speak to a large crowd in Kiev, Ukraine, and my interpreter and I were in the green room getting acquainted. We had never worked together, but as we chatted, it became clear that he was familiar with me because he had read a lot of my books. About 10 minutes before I was scheduled to go on stage, I could tell he was wanting to communicate something important to me. He said, "I know you teach a lot about leaders adding value to others, but you need to know that message will not work here. For 3 generations, people here have been under leadership that has taken value from them and not added value to them." As he left to prepare for our time on stage, I sat in my chair and I realized that I had a big challenge ahead of me. How could I expect the people to help others when the only model of leadership they'd ever seen had leaders who took from them and added value only to themselves as leaders? How could I connect with them? That night, as I walked on stage, I asked, "How many of you are suspicious of leaders?" It looked like every hand was raised. "How many of you have been hurt by leaders?" Once again, hands were raised everywhere. Then I said to the audience, "Everything rises and falls on leadership. For 3 generations, you have experienced leadership that makes everything fall. Tonight, I'm going to help you learn how to help people, add value to them, and help them rise under your leadership." I went on to give them the 3 questions that followers ask of their leaders. Question number 1, do you care for me? Question number 2, can I trust you? And question number 3, can you help me? As I said each question, I asked if it resonated with them, and each time they affirmed that it did. You see, making the shift so that you're doing something every day to add value to others makes good leadership possible. A few years ago, my organization partnered with Rob Hoskins, the CEO of One Hope, to develop curriculum to teach leadership to high school students. The program was piloted in Ghana. Before the course was taught to a group of teenagers, the participants were asked to complete a survey. One question asked was, "Do you want to become a leader?" When they were asked before going through the curriculum, 95% of the respondents answered no. Their opinion of leadership and leaders was negative because most of them had observed corrupt and manipulative leaders taking from others rather than adding to them. Their leaders didn't care about them, so they didn't care to become leaders. However, after taking the course, their attitudes about leadership had shifted. When asked the same question, 85% of them responded with a yes. Why? They had been taught that leadership was about helping people, adding value to them, and using influence to improve their community. That's something they wanted to be part of. Change your focus from receiving to giving. As I've already mentioned, as a young leader, I was focused on how people could help me.